lovely gates and entering into that city and being able to glorify our King forever and ever. It's a great thing to anticipate and a great thing to live for. I hope you're living for that tonight, even as we gather here to prepare ourselves even further to enter into the heavenly city. Tonight, we want to think about how we teach our children, what it is that we're teaching them, and maybe look at the processes that we use a little bit to be maybe thinking about how to improve those processes, how we can do a better job, especially a job that I think we need to improve on in light of the things that our current younger generation is facing. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 tells us to train up a child in the way he should go. Yet generations of children over the course of history have been trained up in every way but the way they should go. So that's not a new problem. In fact, the inspired writers of the book of Proverbs, who tell us to train up a child in the way he should go, also acknowledge that a lot of children aren't trained in that way. Some children rebel against the way that they're trained. And also, you have the statement in Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 11, where the writer there says, there is a generation who curses its father and does not bless its mother. There is a generation that is pure in its own eyes, yet is not washed from its filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. That passage comes pretty close to describing the generation that I was a part of. Rebellious, headstrong, proud, knew better than their parents knew. The generation that grew up in the 60s and 70s, the 1960s and 70s, not the 1860s and 70s, in case you were wondering about that. I don't think Proverbs 30 verses 11 through 13, I don't think it describes the generation of today. I don't see in my dealings with young people today, and I have a lot of interaction with young people, I don't see a lot of rebelliousness and kids being headstrong and proud. The millennials and the Generation Z, as they're called, the ones who've only grown up in the digital age, the ones who are teenagers now and a little bit beyond that, those young people are not typically rebellious and headstrong and proud. They're just lost and confused. And it's a different generation. And it's a different world than the world that I grew up in. The reason, I think, that there's so much confusion among that generation today is primarily due to a lack of adult leadership. The unprecedented access to all sorts of information and entertainment in the digital age, which keeps minds occupied and focused on things other than things that are spiritual. The fact that the leadership of the world today has lost its moral moorings, has lost its compass, so to speak, in direction of morality, all of those things have contributed to the generation that we have today. And so I'm saying maybe the millennials and Generation Z young people are lost and confused, but I don't think it's entirely their fault. There was an article that was shared among several of us at Eastside, and I know several of you read it already, and I'm going to present some statistics from it in this lesson. So if you've heard some of these or read over them and thought about them this last week, I don't apologize. I'll just help you remember what you read. But according to a recent study by the Barna Group, which does a lot of surveys and studies, especially religious and moral trends in our society. The group that they call Generation Z, which is mainly the teenagers of today, is the least Christian generation to date, as for as long as Barna has been doing studies. 34% of Generation Z says that their religious affiliation is either atheist or agnostic. That is, they don't believe in God or they don't know if there's a God. 34% of our teenagers, in other words, that's what they're saying. In fact, young people of that age are twice as likely as adults to say that they are atheists. Think about arriving at that conclusion. Say you're 13, 14, 18, 19 years old, and you've arrived at the conclusion already that there is no God. Only 3 in 5, about 60% or so of this age group, even profess to be any kind of Christian at all. I use that word accommodatively there. Culture is changing fast, and as I said, a lot of young people are confused. We have a generation that's been disciplined by their smartphones and taught sex by Google and conditioned to assume that just because they believe something, that therefore it must be true, because they think it, because they believe it. Only 34% of Generation Z agree that lying is morally wrong. You heard that right. 34% of our teenagers think that lying is morally wrong. That means 66% think it could be okay. Say that what is morally wrong and right changes over time based on society. And 58% of our young people today say that many religions can lead to eternal life and there is no one true religion. So in lieu of all of that, if those statistics are even partially right, and I think that they're probably very accurate actually, we are looking at people that are of a very young age, teens, young teens, older teens, early 20s, who at a very early stage in life, at a time when religious leaders and parents think, well, here's where I can get my child's attention and really send them on the right path. What we're seeing in these statistics is that we've already lost them. That by the time they get to these early ages, they've already made their decisions about these things. And guidance from that point forward will be very, very difficult. And so one of the things I want you to take away from tonight as parents, as grandparents, is that the guidance and training of children in the way that they should go must begin at a very early age. We've always said that. I've heard that preached from the time I was little. But it is true, if it was ever true before, it's 100 times more true now. That you can't wait till a child's a teenager to start to imbue in them the principles of godliness that we find in Scripture. You can't wait. We need also to be very concerned about this mindset that if we just bring them to church, if we just make sure that they come to church, that everything's going to be okay. It's not enough. It's never been enough. But it's certainly not enough now. The primary training of our children belongs in the home, belongs with godly parents. And unless it starts there early and often with a lot of intensity, the chances of a child remaining faithful through their teenage years and into their 20s are actually quite small. We've got to stop with this idea that attending church is the solution to passing on our faith to our children. It's actually only a small part of it. It's a necessary part, but only a small part. So I want to challenge our thinking tonight. And I want to challenge not just, as I said, not just the younger folks, but especially those who are now responsible for training the younger folks, the parents and the grandparents, that all of this reflects not just on their level of commitment, but on our level of commitment. We are facing an increasingly dark world, a world in which, if the older generation, if those who are responsible adults today don't take up their swords to fight the battle, we're going to lose the battle. We're already losing it in a lot of ways. Back in the Old Testament, Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6, there's a really well-known passage. Well, it's one of those passages that's really well-known, except that we don't know all that it says. There's lots of those. But Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6 says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." You ever heard that? Yeah. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." Let me read you the rest of it. "Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you from being priests for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children." You ever read that far in that verse? You see how the adult's rejection of knowledge, of the knowledge of God, the application of His laws in their lives, how that affects the children? It's a lack of commitment to knowing God in the parents and the grandparents. That's the problem with the children. And so we see in Hosea chapter 13 and verse 6, a further problem that applies still to our society. The Lord notes that when they had pasture and they were filled and their heart was exalted, and therefore they forgot me. And I'm telling you, when we're living in the United States of America, where anything you want is virtually a click on a mouse away, that, you know, you can sit on your couch and order a car if you want to. You can do whatever you want to do digitally. You can eat whatever you want to eat. You know, I mean, you could kill yourself doing that, but I'm saying it's available. We live in an age of such prosperity and a culture of such prosperity, we don't really even know what poverty is in this country. Not really. I know there are poor people in America, but the poor people in America are rich in other, would be rich in other countries. So we have these problems. Let me suggest for our thinking tonight, and all of this is just by way of challenging all of us to think about ways that we can up our game, so to speak, as parents, to increase with intensity what we're trying to do and how we're trying to help our young people as they face what they're facing in this world today. But I want to make this point that training requires communication. If we are to train up a child in the way he should go, we're going to have to communicate with our children. The problem for many young people is that they don't know the way to go because they've not been talked to about it. Maybe they've heard sermons if they listen while the preaching's going on. Maybe they've sat in Bible classes, and if they pay attention in the Bible class, they might know some things about the way to go. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about young people, again, from a very early age all the way up through the time that they leave home, having serious conversations with their parents about what God expects of them, about what right and wrong is, about the importance of living a holy life, about the importance of having a relationship with the God who created them. And how much of that goes on? In a book entitled Building Faith at Home, the authors did a study, and they found that 88% of youth who claim to be, you know, from Christian homes, again, quote unquote, 88% of those young people from so-called Christian homes do not have dialogue with their mothers about faith issues. 88%. 95% do not have dialogue with their fathers about faith issues. If we're not talking with our children about these things at home, if it's not salient to them, that is to say, salient, very important to the parents, it won't be very important to the children. If the parents don't communicate it, the children won't get it. Back in the age of the dinosaurs, when I was in graduate school, about 30 years ago, I was able to do a paper and a good bit of original research on the subject of how is faith passed down from one generation to the next. And I was able to read some studies that have been done, not merely in churches of Christ, but say, how do Jewish parents, even today, you know, how are they successful at raising Jewish kids? How are, Amish parents successful at raising Amish children? So on and so forth. So how do parents of any religion, how are they successful at passing down their faith to their children? And the number one thing across the board was, the word that was used in a lot of the studies was this word salience, which means importance. It's salient. It's vitally important to you. And across the board, what was found was that if it's vitally important to the parents, it'll be vitally important to the children. Bottom line. If you don't live it, if you don't talk about it, if you don't discuss it with your children day by day, they're not going to get it. They're not going to get it. If they don't see it meaning everything to you, it's not going to mean anything to them. If everything in the world else means more to you than your faith does, that's the way they'll be. And it doesn't matter if it's sports or work or whatever. The problem for many young people is that the way he should go has not been talked about at home. The Lord knew what he was doing when he told the Israelites in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 7, "You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up." It's just a constant part of living. And the idea that 95% of young people who, you know, their parents claim to be Christians, and 95% of young people say they don't even talk to their dad about their faith. It won't work, folks. It won't work. You can't just bring kids to church, quote unquote, and think that's going to work. It won't. It can't happen that way. Young people haven't been communicated with at home. They haven't been shown how to live it at home. Proverbs 20 and verse 7 says that the righteous man walks in his integrity and his children are blessed after him. Because he's doing the right things in his life, he's living a righteous life, therefore his children have steps to follow in. But if we as Christians here at Eastside or anywhere, if we just go home and then we, you know, talk to our spouses in ways that are unkind and unfair, we exhibit the fact that we don't care to be dishonest to folks when we're talking about in everything from taxes to, you know, dealing with somebody in some sort of a retail establishment or over the phone, and so or somebody calls our house and we, you know, angrily give them whatever over the phone. What we're seeing there is there's a disconnect between what the parents claim to be believing and what they're living in their lives day by day. And you don't think the kids see that? If we're not living it in front of them in the home, we can't honestly, can we, expect them when they become adults to live it in this dark world? And that sort of brings me to the third point. Training requires communication. Communication in word, communication in deed, and communication in expectation. I'm not sure today with the parenting that's going on. I don't know what goes on in everybody's home. I know this, that the parenting that I had from my parents, there was never a doubt in my mind that my parents fully expected me to be a faithful Christian from the time I left their home for the rest of my life. And that if I did not do that, I would not be meeting their expectations, for one thing. I would not be going in the way that they had trained me to go, that they had pointed me to go in. And I don't know if that's going on today. It needs to be. But I get this feeling sometimes that one of the reasons our young people are so directionless is because they've not been given any expectations for their direction. that they've not been pointed in this direction, and their parents haven't really, you know, the parents put all sorts of pressures. You need to get this sort of education. You need to get this sort of job. You need to marry this kind of person. What about you need to be faithful to God? What about that expectation for the rest of their lives? And our parents putting that first and foremost above any expectation that they have for their children. Abraham was told to command his children and his household after him that they keep the way of the Lord. You got to tell them you expect that of them. Genesis 18 and verse 19. Training in this way, training that God wants us to give our children, leads then to walking in the way that is right. Train a child in the way he should go. Daniel and his friends stand as examples of this. We know the story, and I'm not going to go back and read all of it to you, but we know the story of Daniel. We've known it since we were children. We know that Daniel and his friends were carted off to Babylon at a very young age. Almost certainly they were teenagers, maybe not very old teenagers, when they were taken off to Babylon. And you remember that they were encouraged to eat some food from the king's table. And Daniel and his friends determined that they would not defile themselves with the king's delicacies. We're not sure how they could have defiled themselves. Maybe the food didn't meet Jewish requirements for clean food. Maybe it had been sacrificed to idols. There could be some other issues that were involved in it. But whatever it was, those men did not eat. And later on, Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, their Hebrew names, when they were told to bow down to that golden image that the king had set up, they told the king, "We will not serve your gods or worship the image that you've set up. We're not going to do it." We're amazed, even looking back so far in history, we're amazed at what these young people did in carrying out the training that they no doubt had received back home in Jerusalem. Have you ever thought about that? These young men didn't have this kind of conviction to stand in the way they stood had they not been told the way of the Lord and shown the way of the Lord and had that communicated to them all the time they were growing up, so that by the time they became teenagers, shipped off to a foreign land, foreign culture, all of these pressures upon them, mom and dad aren't around anymore. You just think about, you take from our congregation the average, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-old, and we ship them over to Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan or something. That's a Muslim country. And we put them in a royal household over there, and they're to be trained in by some imam in one of the mosques over there, and that's where they're going to school. How long would they stand for their faith? Could it be? This is scary. Could it be that the Jews in Jerusalem, who were so far departed from God that he sent the Babylonians to destroy them, could it be that the Jews who are in Jerusalem were doing a better job of teaching their children the way to go than we're doing today? Could that be? It's almost unbelievable even to think that, isn't it? But those young men had conviction. And they show us what it means to be trained in the way they should go. The training that God expects parents to give is going to guide this generation into its future and future generations as well beyond that. Back in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verses 1 and 2, this is the commandment. These are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded you to teach, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes, his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. That was the expectation of God then. It's really still his expectation today, that we train our children to live right in their futures, that they train their children to live right in their futures, and on from generation to generation. It's more than just saying it. It's more than just bringing them to church. It's showing them how to live it. It's presenting the expectation in such a way that they'll be motivated and inspired to reach to achieve it. You fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. That's the commandment. That's the commandment of Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. All your children, Isaiah 54:13 says, all your children, in prophesying about the coming kingdom, all your children shall be taught by the Lord, and great shall be the peace of your children. Listen to me. I don't think that our children today have a lot of peace in their lives. And the only reason we could, only thing we could attribute that to would be they're not being taught by the Lord. It's not the Lord's fault. When parents will use God's book to instruct their children then would be instructed by the Lord. All Scripture is inspired of God and is profitable for exactly that. 2 Timothy 3:16 says, training in the way that a child should go is not just a knowledge of the book. It's the ability and the will to use the knowledge in the book to choose the right way. So let's be clear. When we talk about training a child in the way he should go, yeah, they need to know the book backwards and forwards. But it's more than just knowledge. It's no more than just knowing the stories, how everything fits together, the geography of it and all of that. That's all great and important. But that's really just foundational to what we need to be doing. Then to think about and talk about applications of those things in day-to-day life, expectations that those applications will be made by the child, whether the parent is with them or not, whether it's today, tomorrow, or 30 years from now. Those are the things we need to be communicating to our children if we're to train them. I believe the promises of God. I believe that when God said back in Jeremiah 29 that you will seek me and find me when you seek me, that if we'll put God and his righteousness first and his kingdom first, he will be found of us and of our children if we seek him. If this means more to us than everything else or anything else in the world, it'll work. But we can't think that we can play church and get it done. That won't work. So, again, challenge our thinking tonight. Parents, grandparents, those who are sitting in this room who have influence over children, that's a lot of people. Bible class teachers. Make it serious. Make it important to you. Make it your life. It's the only way it'll ever be their life. We appreciate your good attention tonight. We offer an invitation that's the Lord's invitation. This moment in time, really any time that someone wants to obey the gospel, is ready to do that, they're welcome to do it. But right now we're going to sing a song, and if you're outside of Christ and would become a Christian tonight, we'd encourage you to do that. Not just to be baptized, not just to be immersed in water. It's much more than that. It's a commitment. It's a lifelong commitment to be raised to walk in newness of life, to have a relationship with God for the rest of your life. If you're ready to make that kind of commitment today, we'd ask you to come while together we stand and sing.